Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 3, Episode 15. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd of ESPN. Dave, we've had a chance to sit back now, a late Sunday night game. We did a podcast Monday, kind of initial reactions. We've had a chance to sit and watch the game again, do some analysis. Mike Tomlin's had his press conference. Let's just get up to date on the injury news first. And it sounds like things are actually pretty good for the Steelers, maybe as good as they've been since they opened training camp.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Marcus Gilbert went down with a hyperextended knee in that game. He did not return. You know, it doesn't sound too serious to hear Mike Tomlin talk. So, you know, he might be limited at the first part of the weekend practice here, but he makes it sound like he's going to be good to go. Ramon Foster suffered an ocular migraine, evidently. I'm not sure. You know, some people say he might have got, I think Mark Caballi said he saw him get a hand in the face there and, you know, in the eye. But it appears, Mike Tomlin said, too, that doesn't seem to be serious at all. He should be ready to go. Troy Polamalu had a right calf strain, which might limit him in practice early in the week. But Thomas said, you know, specifically it shouldn't prevent him from playing against the Jets. He did have some, you know, I guess for Tomlin, kind of uplifting news. But once again, I want to kind of frame this and don't get too excited just yet as far as James Harrison goes with that knee. Harrison worked on Monday, and, you know, they're going to let him evidently, I guess, run today. So I would expect Harrison, and, you know, they're going to keep him on sort of the same schedule or protocol this week that they had him on last week. So they'll slowly work him up in activity to see how the knee responds and let that serve as a guide. So I would expect all four of those guys to be limited or no practice for maybe a few of them today when the injury report comes out later today. And then, you know, ramp them on up from there. James Harrison had some irritation in the knee. Evidently, in a quick talk with Jim Wexel late last week there. So, you know, soft tissue and still trying to recover from that. Let's keep in mind that Harrison really only has, what, four or five limited practices now to his name dating back to
I think two. I mean, I think he had two last week, and that was it. And he went on Monday, but I think he just ran, or at least that's what Tomlin said. He said he ran, so I don't know. But I think just those two. And the other thing to point out is I'm not sure. I mean, I know people are concerned about this, and Jerry Dulac has said things like, well, if he has a setback here, he's going to be out for a long, long time. Look, the guy just had surgery a month ago, and coming back from that, this is normal. If you have surgery on your knee and you're trying to work out the first couple times, if it's within 4 weeks, you're going to have swelling and discomfort. This is not kind of I wouldn't look at anything that's happened so far as a setback, and I would say – probably the 5 days off he had from last Wednesday or more time to rest, and the fact that the Steelers are pursuing him going forward and taking it on a almost a day-to-day basis is just kind of normal progression. I wouldn't see this as being anything that's kind of red flag. Doesn't mean a red flag can't pop up, but this is the normal recovery period.
Yeah, if they got what was causing the problem out of there, and if indeed it was a bone spur like I heard behind the left kneecap, and if that was the thing that was going on, then 4 weeks, I believe he had surgery on the 15th, if memory serves me, of August. So, you know, we're right now, you know, by Friday, that'll be a month's time there. So that should be about the right time frame there if, you know, for him to really start working back. A name Mike Tomlin didn't mention that the media did not ask him about yesterday during his presser was Stevenson Sylvester, or Sylvester Stevenson. I keep kidding. I don't know why.
Stevenson Sylvester.
I can't No, I can't get that name correct ever since the kid was drafted.
You had it right the first time.
I'm also going off of one hour worth of sleep last night anyway. So, but anyway, he was not asked about him. You know, he tore the MCL in the final days at La Trobe there. And, you know, he was not asked about him. So that's one name to look for today. Rashard Mendenhall.
A good point, Dave. That's a good point. We didn't get an update on that. Take it for what it's worth, but that is interesting. It was not mentioned.
Yeah, and shame on the media for not catching that and asking him about it. Also, Rashard Mendenhall, he made sound like he has a chance to play in this game when asked about the running back situation. But I got to be honest with you. We saw what Adrian Peterson did week one, and I'm willing to admit I was wrong on that. Boy, that guy is a the medical wonders in this world now are incredible. And what he did in week one is superhuman, in my opinion, to come back that quick. So, you called that one. I mean, I just medical advancements nowadays with these guys coming back 7 months off this thing is just incredible. And, you know, we sort of have said, okay, well, let's use Adrian Peterson as a guideline here. I guess technically, it's not out of the question that Mendenhall could see some action this week. I still say, hey, when you're able to dress the other four running backs that you have right now, why not give him another week or two and maybe get past the bye week here? And kind of reading into the way Tomlin phrased some things, this is just total speculation on my part and trying to read Tomlin ease. I don't think he's going to play this week.
I think you're right on that. I think that's the way I would read it. The fact that he wasn't even listed as questionable this past week leads me to believe that you're probably right. We're probably after the bye week. I agree with all of that stuff. So, yeah, I think the interesting thing is Harrison and Stevenson Sylvester will be the guys to work, and it sounds like the rest of the 53 should be good to go. Dave, I have a question for you, and I tried to find out the answer to this. I had seen someone, I think it was Adam Kaplan, but I'm not 100% sure, discussing the waiver wire rules now. And did they, in the new CBA or somehow in the past year, did they put in something where if you claim somebody on waivers, you have to have them on your roster for 3 weeks? Because I saw that in regard to, we've seen teams, particularly early in the season, particularly against division foes, when another team might cut somebody and they were going to play that team, they'd pick a guy up for a week and then release him and maybe just pump him for information. I thought I saw Adam Kaplan tweet on one of the waiver pickups last week that, okay, now they had to keep him on the roster for 3 weeks. Have you seen that rule?
Yes, I have, and I believe it is for an opponent that you're playing. I don't remember the time frame. I'll research that of how far ahead that I think it's if you play the opponent the next week.
It is related to the opponents you play?
If you pick up a guy that a player released that played on that team that you're about to play, I believe that's the rule. I'm not 100% about that, but I have read something along the lines before on that. And in addition, I believe if you claim a guy off of another player's practice squad to put on the 53-man roster, I believe he has to stay, I think it's 3 weeks as well, too. On that. So, if somebody claims somebody off the Steelers practice squad, then he would have to, you just can't sign him from one practice squad to another practice squad. If you're going to sign a guy off another guy's practice squad, you have to sign him to your 53-man roster, and I believe he has to stay for 3 weeks there too. So I'll research that a little bit more. In fact, that'll make for a nice post, I think.
And the reason I ask, obviously, is because DeMarcus Van Dyke is a guy, and we heard Mike Tomlin talk about it and having expectations that this, he talked about the kid's high ceiling and how he was in a pool of guys with Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown when the Steelers were drafting, so they looked at him. And I had speculated that maybe we would see a move with Van Dyke because, the Steelers may have offensive line issues or other issues. I will say it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. But then I had seen the rule, and I just wanted to follow up and see if the Steelers even were required to keep Van Dyke for these 3 weeks or not, because obviously the Raiders are going to fall into this three-week window here because they play them next week, and I hadn't even thought about that until just now.
I know it's for your next opponent, like the Jets. If we were to claim somebody that way with them, I'm pretty sure that applies to that. I'm not sure how far out in advance that applies, though, because, I mean, let's face it, people are waived and all like that, constantly here throughout the season. You'll have some, people pick up people for obvious needs there. So I'll research that, and that's a good question, but I don't think it runs past a week ahead, but I could be wrong on that. And speaking of DeMarcus Van Dyke, you hit on it. Tomlin talked about him before the Sunday game, and we kind of talked, I believe we talked about his words, what he said about him on the Monday podcast, basically exactly what you said. We looked at this guy when we were kind of looking in the same group of Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen. Tomlin likes the upside, the big-time upside on this kid, his speed. They're going to carry five cornerbacks throughout the season, I think, unless they really get into another roster crunch here. So DeMarcus Van Dyke, I think, is going to be on the roster for a little while.
Okay, Dave. Well, Dave, let's some really good work you did this week in the analysis. And before we get to that, let me just go to the bread and butter of the offensive line and get your thoughts on offensive line play. And, I think we touched on the fact that you weren't thrilled the first time through in looking at Cologne and Pouncey. I thought Mike Adams had a pretty good game until the last four plays of the game, which, kind of extraordinary circumstances, let's just say that. What are your overall thoughts, and then maybe we can break it down a little bit.
Yeah, I'll have my offensive line report up either late today or early on Thursday there. I haven't graded it out specifically yet, but my first five times through the tape now, Ligurski, when he came in, really, really was a disappointment there when he came in at right guard, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I did not like the play there. Gave up a couple of sacks, a couple of pressures in the face there. In fact, one play, if you remember the play in the second half, where after Emmanuel Sanders or Antonio Brown left, I forget which one, there was the pass down the middle to Jericho Cotchery that was sailed over his head there. I believe that was because of pressure up the middle there by Ligurski, allowing it kind of in the face there. Mike Adams, up until the end there, hey, they were teeing off at the end. I think you have to throw that entire last series that the Steelers had the ball after the interception, I think you have to throw that out the window, because those guys were just allowed to pin their ears back and go after the quarterback then. Let's see what else. Or Willie Cologne, I really didn't think, didn't have a good game. When you throw in two false starts on top of that, he allowed a sack. They had one of those stunt twists there where Derek Wolf kind of looped around there, and it was really nicely executed on the Broncos' part. And really, he didn't have a chance there, in my opinion. There, maybe he has to come off that block. He was blocking to his right, helping Pouncey. Maybe he has to do a better job of recognizing that. But Mike Tomlin even said in the press conference yesterday that, he's still kind of learning, the left guard spot there. So Pouncey, not overly impressive. Max Starks, another one kind of average. I think he allowed some hurries, some deep pressures there. And overall, just not a good game for the offensive line. I don't expect them to grade out good, when I finish out my report later on today.
Okay. So let's get to the formation stuff, and I thought that was very interesting. It's our first chance to see Todd Haley's offense in a regular season game. I'm not sure I was necessarily taken aback by anything, and in the course of the game, nothing looked too surprising. But I guess the first thing I would point to is the fact that Will Johnson only played eight plays. They had two backs in the backfield on 12 occasions. He only had eight plays, and they really ran primarily, if you want to call it that, three wide-out sets about 70% of the time.
Yeah, they ran 11 personnel, what we call it, and people hear us talk about personnel. When you hear these numbers, the first number is the amount of running backs and fullbacks combined, and the second number is the amount of tight ends, and then you can do the math there to figure out the wide receivers. So 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers on 52 plays out of, 71, I believe. So I was expecting a little less than that. I think the circumstances, I think Tomlin addressed that. I think Mike Byers asked him about that yesterday. And I think the circumstances and the no huddle kind of dictated that they do that during the game. So I would expect that to kind of come down a little bit. I was really expecting more 12 personnel, which is one running back, two tight ends, two wide receivers. We saw a lot of that during the preseason there, and I kind of expected more than just six plays, heading into week one there. So, you know, I'll be tracking that moving forward. And let's face it, you know, with that offensive line, if they continue to play that way, you know, they're going to start needing, in my opinion, to run the ball better. They're going to need two tight ends in there. Moving forward. Now, of course, Leonard Pope, and I said this way back when Leonard Pope was signed, you kept reading this, you know, quote-unquote crap out there. You know, obviously people not watching tape on Leonard Pope saying, oh, he's a good blocker, this is a good signing and all like that. That is wrong, people. Leonard Pope is not a consistent blocker at all. That's the reason he was on the street while he was available as a free agent for the price Steelers got him there. So, you know, when Wesley Saunders comes back, and let me tell you, there was a special teams play in that game by David Paulson on one of those punt returns where he just delivered a slobber knocker there, and I gave him a gold star on his helmet there for that. If that's the type of intensity that kid's going to have him play with, when Wesley Saunders comes back from his suspension, don't be surprised if it's Leonard Pope that gets the gets the time card punched and is out the door here. So
I couldn't agree more. I just it baffles me. I guess Todd Haley, when he got the job, got to, you know, pick a little bit in terms of personnel, and the guy he picked is Leonard Pope. Saw nothing in camp, saw nothing in the preseason games, saw nothing good in the game against Denver. Wes Saunders comes back. David Paulson's not going to be the one to go. I promise you that. I mean, I guess there's an outside chance they try to move Paulson to the practice squad, and he'll probably get there, but I got to think Leonard Pope's on borrowed time.
I'm with you, because I think Paulson also is one that you can line up in the slot. You know, he's going to take some time getting off the end and out into routes because, you know, he's just not adept to doing that in the NFL level yet. But I think he's more of a pass receiving threat, even though Leonard Pope's got a huge wingspan and is a big, big target, you know, especially in the red zone. But I think in the long run, I think Paulson is a guy that you want to spend time with and kind of work with there, because let's face it, he'll be the third tight end when Wesley Saunders comes back. And I'm with you. I'm beginning to think that's going to be the course of action there. But yeah, well, you know, one thing that I saw that I did like, David, and we'll get into more wrapping a bow around this Broncos game here in a minute. Man, I love that 22 personnel grouping. And if you remember back, I said, boy, I sure hope we see some pony stuff or some rocket stuff with two running backs in that backfield. And we saw it on, we saw two backs. Oh, I don't have this in front of me here right now, but on a handful of plays there, we saw two running backs in the backfield with Chris Rainey, and I think Redmond was in on one, and Dwyer was in on the other. And on the touchdown pass to Heath Miller in the second half there, or was it at the end of the first half? I don't remember.
First half
there. Boy, what a great play design that was. You had your backs kind of split there, and you sent both Dwyer and Rainey out into the flat there, which took guys with him. It left Heath Miller one-on-one with the linebacker there, a nice little jerk route by Heath Miller, and he's wide open for that touchdown. Now, there are so many things you can do with the 22 personnel or 21 personnel like that moving forward, not only running the football, but passing out of that as well, too. I really would look for that more going forward. I really like that. Not only will Todd Haley have to use it now a little bit more, because he's got to cover the tracks of that play, you know, because if you go out there and line up that formation, it again, that sticks out like a sore thumb in tape study right now. So you're going to have to cover your tracks using that more going forward to set that play up again in the future. So that's one thing that I like there. And I would think that as far as personnel goes, you know, and it's hard to say, hey, you need to keep Emmanuel Sanders off the field, probably 10 more plays a game. But, you know, you're going to have to do that, I think, moving forward at times.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, and we've talked a lot about this in Monday's podcast, recapping things. I'm sure Rainey will get more opportunities, but I think the thing to take out of the press conference in terms of personnel was it looks like Jonathan Dwyer is going to get, I don't know that he gets the start, But Mike Tomlin made it very clear that he's going to get more opportunities. He did well with the ones he had. He had 9 carries in the game, I think 43 yards. So I almost will go to the point of saying I assume Jonathan Dwyer is going to be the featured back on Sunday.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, should he?
I'm all for it.
I am too at this point.
I don't know that this is a knock on Redmond as much as it is Dwyer really showing himself.
That's a great call. I couldn't put it in, and I was going to say the same thing. This is not a knock on Isaac Redmond. I just don't think Isaac Redmond's not running like he's healthy right now, you know. We haven't seen him do that kind of that spin that he likes to do out of the middle of the pile, and he just does not seem like he's – you know, running with the same authority that Dwyer is. Dwyer is hunting for contact.
It certainly looked like it, particularly on that run around the left side where he bounced it out and put his shoulder down into the DB. That was a really good run.
And then a little pass out to the left-hand side on 1-2 was one where he stayed in bounds, too, and got another 3, 4, 5 yards in addition, too. Now, look, he's not going to be the best pass-catching running back out of the backfield, but hey, if you can use him on 2 downs and then maybe Rainey or Baron Batch, you know, on 3rd down there moving forward until Mendenhall gets back in the fold here full time, I don't see how you don't let Jonathan Dwyer start this next game against the Jets, because I think he has earned it.
Yep. The other personnel question, I guess, will be Jason Worlds, how healthy he is. I assume he's going to, you know, he got a clean bill of health, nothing coming out of that game. So I would imagine we can pretty much say Jason Worlds is healthy. It's the wrist issue. I was surprised maybe that he didn't see more snaps in that first game, particularly even though it was an uncontested sack, if you will. Chris Carter did get a lot of the snaps. I don't have the exact breakdown in front of me, but I think we'll probably see more Jason Worlds this week as well.
Yeah, I think Chris Carter was on the field a little under 50 snaps on defense. Jason Worlds was on just under 25 in that game there. So, 2-1 on that. And Worlds did spell Lamar Woodley in that game as well, too. Woodley had a total of right at 50 snaps in that game. So I think they're slowly working Worlds back into football shape. It looked like he ate Chris Rainey, didn't it?
I'm sorry.
It looked like he ate Chris Rainey.
Yeah, he looked big. I gotta say, he did look big. I was surprised. I thought it was Lamar Woodley on the other side for a second.
I thought Nick Eason got re-signed. that had to be a result of him only being able to work the upper body or you know, something. I don't know, but he looked maybe it's just because we haven't seen him in so long. I don't know.
I mean, I had the exact same reaction, I'll tell you.
And I think that's been sort of the reaction on Twitter as well, too. And look, Jason Worlds was nothing special in that game, first game back, first action of the season. He's going to ramp up his conditioning. I see them, you know, if James Harrison is not able to go again this week against the Jets, I see them platooning both Chris Carter and Worlds over there on that right side again. Chris Carter, about his game, you know, against Peyton Manning, it's hard to judge anybody on a pass rush against Peyton Manning, David. It really is, because the guy, you know, out of the shotgun a lot of plays. I mean, there probably wasn't, 10 or 15 plays he was under center for that game. And, you know, his ability to read the defense and to check to a play and get rid of the ball so quickly. You know, we saw the pass rush up the middle by Larry Foote early in the game. Of course, Jason Worlds had the gimme sack early in the game as well, too. But, you know, you're just not going to get that pass rush on the outside. So I'll forgive Chris Carter and Lamar Woodley for that, because, I mean, Woodley, too, drops into coverage quite a bit as well, too. So when you take that away from his stats, you know, and the front three, with a front three pressure against their 5, you know, they weren't able to push the pocket fast enough for, you know, before Peyton got the ball out there. So, you know, keep in mind, we played Peyton Manning in this game here. Now, as far as Chris Carter's play, stopping the run, not too terribly impressive. They ran right at him from the very first play, and we knew they would, David. You and I both said, hey, they're going to run right at Chris Carter, start off with there. They took Brett Kiesel and Chris Carter right out on that very first run there. On the touchdown run by Noshon Marino in that game, Carter kind of falls for over pursues, I guess, backside, inside a little bit too much. I think it's Brandon Stokley that easily pins Chris Carter inside on that play then, which subsequently closes off the lane to Lawrence Timmons making the play. I'm not saying Lawrence Timmons makes that tackle anyway, but it didn't help that the lane got squeezed out on that play there. So, you know, we knew Chris Carter was going to have his problems here. He's going to work best able to use that speed rush against quarterbacks that take that 5 and 7 step drop and hold on to the ball in the pocket there. But overall, you know, you had the 2 sacks. I think you had 2 or 3 hits on the quarterbacks and maybe 3 or 4 pressures overall, but really just, you know, nothing on Peyton Manning in that game.
Yeah, and as you said, he's a difficult guy to judge because of how cerebral he is and how quickly he gets rid of the ball. Dave, you want to look at the talk stack stats for the week?
Yeah, and this is this is one of my favorite stats. This and the net adjusted yards, which we'll probably get here in a minute here. It looks at explosive plays of over 20 yards, both that the offense gets and the defense gives up. You find a differential between that, and then you take the differential of the takeaways and giveaways that a team gets, and that gives you what's called a tox number and a tox stat. And teams, and this stat, boy, when you look at the history of this stat, it's amazing, David. It's an 80% win ratio from week to week for teams that have a +2 or better tox stat. And, boy, it was right on the money this week. Teams that had a +2 or better tox number went 9-1 overall. So I went to Catholic school, thank God, and that I think that works out to 90%. Which is 10% more than what was expected. This stat will slowly adjust throughout the years, but it goes to show you how important explosive plays and how important takeaways, turnovers are in games from week to week. The Steelers had a +1 tox number in the game, which kind of coincides, David, with Mike Tomlin saying that just didn't make enough plays there because one more turnover in that game or one more explosive play in that game, we're probably talking about a Steelers win here in that game.
Well, right. I mean, if Tracy Porter's touchdown is, a 60-yard pass to Mike Wallace, Steelers win, Broncos don't.
Yeah, and, you know, there were a couple – play to Antonio Brown there in the end zone. Nice play by Mike Adams in the end zone there. I hate to say that you can boil this game down to just a few plays, but when you go back and watch this entire game, David, the first half, I thought there was – we saw cracks in the defense, but nothing really, really alarming. Hell, they went into the half doing what they wanted to do. They kept the ball away from Peyton Manning. Now, of course, they didn't capitalize on the red zone like they should have, and that ended up being the difference in the game there. But the first half, you know, you're thinking, okay, we're hanging with them. You know, we've got this down to a second-half game. We get the ball back in the second half. Now, Peyton Manning just, you know, Steelers opened up and had a nice long drive, to open up the second half. Then they give up the big play, explosive play to Demaryius Thomas there after having Manning sit so long. And then, you know, Manning had just wore down the defense in that no huddle there, and they looked gassed there. And, I guess what I'm saying, and we said this the other day, when you look at this game and you the Steelers had the ball back with 3 minutes left in the game and a chance to win it, you have to be pretty happy with the way the things went in the game, all things considered.
I think there are a lot of kind of alarm bells being sounded, and it's 1 week. It's all we have to judge, so I expect people to make their judgments based on that. The thing is, the defensively, I think they're question marks. The 3 80-yard drives, and we'll caveat it all with, you know, Peyton Manning and everything like that. But I don't throw in the fatigue factor. This defense was not on the field that long. It's not a fatigue factor. It's making plays factor. Now, I don't know if the fact that Troy, with this strained calf, he was less inclined to be in the box because he maybe didn't have the recovery speed or he just didn't want to get caught out of position. But I think he was notably absent, particularly in the second half. And we'll go from there. I mean, is it over? No, it's not over. Of course not. But is it? Does it raise some issues? Yeah, it does. This was the issue last year. Even though statistically this defense was ranked number one, they had trouble getting off the field. They gave up some longer drives. And they weren't known for giving up big plays until the playoffs. And I'm not as concerned with that that's going to be the case with this defense. I'm just worried about them making plays to get off the field.
Yeah, and you don't play a Peyton Manning every week either, thank God. I mean, we forget the other team's paid to play too. And look, they you know, there were some instances in that game too. You know, Cortez Allen did not have a good game. Boy, he got turned around on one of those drives from when the Broncos were in their own end, coming out of their end zone there by either Stokely or Decker, I forget who it was specifically there. You know, the tackling was very poor. We discussed the yards after catch in this game. Dick LeBeau preaches tackle the catch. And that's one thing they didn't do well in this game. Thought Larry Foote was a bright spot in this game. Not so much in the second half, but in the first half, I thought he was. Cameron Hayward, 17 snaps, I thought he played fairly well. Lawrence Timmons was kind of quiet in there, inside there. We need more from him. Boy, Peyton Manning ran away from him on that scramble there. Looked like Lawrence Timmons was running in quicksand there, but. There was a lot to be concerned about, but I think there's a lot of stuff fixable when you consider that Ryan Clark was not in this game. James Harrison was not in this game either here. So, let's not overreact on one game. Now, if Mark Sanchez comes out and hangs 40 on the Steelers this week, let's worry.
Well said, Dave. And in fact, with that, let's get to our guest for this week. Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. He's been with us before. Last time was when the Jets were in town for the AFC Championship game. Again, the Steelers snuck out with a victory. Mike and Dave and I had a chance to talk a little earlier. Unfortunately, I got knocked out of the conversation because of some technical problems right at the end. But as always, Dave carried it along. And here's our conversation with Mike. We're pleased to have as our guest, as we do every Wednesday, one of the best beat writers we know, a guy covering the New York Jets and the whole New York scene, really, for the New York Post, Mike Vaccaro. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike VACC. Mike, as always, thanks for taking the time to join us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, it's good to join you guys this morning.
Mike, let's first touch on the offseason. Of course, there seems to be a circus around Rex Ryan and the Jets kind of every year, and this year I think it was probably magnified times 10 with the acquisition of Tim Tebow. Lots of differing views about whether, what the purpose of that was and how Mark Sanchez would react. What was your impression over the course of the offseason and through training camp of how those two got along and really kind of the circus environment around the team?
Well, it was definitely a circus. I mean, you had ESPN there every day in Cortland. You had some kind of crazy story seemingly popping up every couple of hours. And then, of course, the offense, which was certainly was a focal point because of how poorly it played last year and because they acquired Tebow, didn't score a touchdown with the first unit all preseason. So that was, of course, a source of a lot of angst among people around the Jets. But, all of a sudden, they scored 48 points, 34 from the offense the other day, and it seems better. I give Mark Sanchez a lot of credit. I mean, from day one, he really has seemed to at least publicly embrace the idea of what they were trying to do with Tebow. I think that he trusts Rex Ryan, he trusts Mike Tannenbaum when they tell him he's their number one quarterback, and that Tebow is there to compliment him and not the other way around.
How about his mental state? There were a lot of people who felt like, A, he was too fragile to handle the competition. And, this was a big vote of no confidence. I mean, we heard from every guy in the world chimed in on this, from Joe Namath on down. What's your feeling about his mental state and how those two actually got along through training camp?
I always thought that was overblown, to be honest with you guys. I mean, I thought, here's a guy who his first 2 years in the league takes a team to the AFC Championship game. That's a pretty good resume. I realize he had a tough year last year. Part of the reason he had a tough year last year is that he was running for his life half the time. Some real poor play across the board in the offensive line. And he and his receivers never got on the same page. I'm not saying he's blameless for any of that. But I think that when he goes through that, when he goes through the 3 years he's gone through, absorb the criticism he's taken at a young age, I think he's actually quite mentally tough. I mean, and, I think he's had his issues through the years. There was a hot dog eating incident. There was a time he, kind of broke down by, reading from prepared text after a game. And, look, everybody's got their missteps, and in New York it's going to be magnified. But I think in a lot of ways he was perfectly equipped for this because I do think he's got a lot of confidence. I do think he never lost track of his he never lost the idea that he was capable of being a quarterback in New York. And I think all he's got to do is look across town. It was Eli Manning's fourth year when he won the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying the Jets are going to win the Super Bowl this year, but I am going to say that, it was year four, and midway through year four, by the way, when Eli finally kind of came into his own and embraced his destiny as a New York quarterback. And this is year four for Sanchez. So, I mean, if we gave Eli 4 years, I don't see why it's unfair to give Mark Sanchez 4 years.
Mike, you referenced the preseason there, and I watched a little bit of that, of the Jets being as how the Steelers were facing them this year. What did you notice different in week one in the big win against the Bills offensively that you didn't see in the preseason?
Well, the big thing was the offensive line. Obviously, there was Wayne Hunter became maybe the most celebrated offensive lineman in New York history. I think certainly in the preseason, New York football fans would have a hard time picking a lot of the offensive linemen for either team out of the lineup. And meanwhile, he was public enemy number one. He was traded away. Austin Howard came in, played a really good game, and I think that's really the thing that opened a lot of eyes, at least among the Jets faithful. I think there was a lot of worry that, especially with Buffalo spending about $1 billion and upgrading its defensive front, that they were going to kill Sanchez, and it couldn't have been farther from the truth. They didn't even breathe on him. I mean, they never got anywhere close to Sanchez. Mario Williams was invisible all day, and I think that was really not only the most surprising element of the offense, but I think the most encouraging aspect is that, I know the Steelers, obviously, there's a lot of angst around the Steelers with their offensive line, and I think it was very similar around the Jets. And, at least for 1 week, and look, the Bills aren't the Bills of the that they remember from back in the day. I mean, obviously, it's not a juggernaut. The team hasn't made the playoffs in 12 years. But still, it was a team that came with a reputation of being a pretty tough customer up front, and the Jets were able to handle that. And that, I think, is the most encouraging thing that they took away from it.
Mike Tomlin said during his press conference yesterday, that they weren't really going to be spending a lot of time, worrying about the Wildcat or whatnot, with what Tebow does specifically. They are aware of what he does. But he also said, they only scratched the tip of the iceberg in regard to Tebow. How did you see Tebow used the way you thought he was going to be used in that game? And do you see that being built upon heading into the game with the Steelers?
Yeah, that was one of the things I think that the Jets also had to be happy with the way that the first game went. I mean, they were up 21-0, early in the second quarter. There was no need to empty the playbook at all. We kind of saw a flea flicker early in the third quarter, which is a little bit out of character for what we've seen for the Jets the past couple of years. But, specifically in regards to the Wildcat and their use of Tebow, it was very basic. It was a couple of runs. It was a couple of handoffs. Nothing really that would make you say, wow, to stand up and take notice. And I think that's partly because they didn't need it. And I think they were very grateful they didn't need it because I think, who knows in their bag of tricks because it's been so secretive from day one. It's really hard to tell exactly the depth to which they expect to use it, but I do think that there's a lot more there. The thing that makes the Wildcat with Tebow so much more intriguing than in so many other cases is this is a guy obviously who's a quarterback, and while we can make fun about his arm strength and his accuracy, the fact is that if a Wildcat is run properly, at some point during the course of its usage, there's going to be a wide open guy, and even Tim Tebow, for all of his questions about his accuracy, will probably be able to connect with an open receiver downfield. And that's ultimately, I think, what the Jets are hoping for, whether it's this week, a month from now, 3 months from now, that's the kind of stuff that it's going to yield.
We're on with Mike Vaccaro, of the New York Post. Mike, when there were a lot of questions about the wide receiver group, as Santonio Holmes being the only experienced guy I've heard a lot of people say, well, okay, that's been answered now. Well, of course, I would argue that you play one game, you're not answering any questions. What have you seen from Stephen Hill and Jeremy Curley, who had a punt return and a catch for a touchdown? And what do you think overall the receiving core?
Well, look, I mean, to be fair, on both sides, yes, it's only a week, so I'm not going to jump to any conclusions. I'm not going to nominate Stephen Hill for Rookie of the Year or Jeremy Curley to be the new Slash, even though he scored two touchdowns, one receiving and one punt returning. That said, I do think that they did show a lot more in Game 1 than they did in the preseason. I'm not sure I'm saying that by design. I don't think that part was by design. I think there was a lot of issues about Stephen Hill because he dripped some balls in the preseason, and I think that's still a concern for him. You don't just lose that overnight. But, look, I mean, what the two of them did show were good motors, good instincts. And, look, I mean, if you can proceed on with that, I think that's the biggest concern the Jets had. You guys know well the ability that Santonio has to make catches in traffic and to make circus acrobatic catches. He made one the other night, the other day, which is almost reminiscent of a Super Bowl-winning catch, except it was his arm was out of bounds. It also would have been one of these highlight reel films plays all year. But, you know, he's a lot more effective. He's not the only guy that people are going to focus their attention on. And what these guys do, obviously, if they're able to perform as well as they did in Week 1, is open things up for him, and more specifically, open things up for Sanchez. I mean, Sanchez, look, there's two ways to make Sanchez look like a lot better quarterback than he looked last year. One is that the offensive line protects him, and they did in Week 1 a lot better than they did at any time last year. And one is that the receivers run smart routes, which was really a problem last year, including Santonio. You know, I think the receivers coaches, the offensive coordinator last year and this year, you know, used to scratch their head at some of the routes that the receivers ran. You know, whether it's the Bills secondary or a renewed commitment to that by the Jets receivers, who knows, but they were open an awful lot on Sunday, and that made Mark Sanchez look a lot better too.
Mike, if we switch to the other side of the ball, we know that the strength is really, you look at the secondary with Revis and Cromartie. LaRon Landry was picked up in the offseason from Washington. It really looks like the strength of the defense. First of all, there were some reports that Darrelle Revis had suffered, I hesitate to use the term because of what's attached to it, but a mild concussion. What's his status? What's the team's health status? And tell us about that secondary.
Yeah, mild concussion is like a mild heart attack, right?
Right.
What happens to somebody else, it's mild. What happens to you, it's pretty serious. Look, I think that's really a concern for them. I think that they're going to take it very cautious because certainly you don't want to have it be a recurring issue through the year. Obviously, I mean, it would be a real detriment to them if they weren't able to bring Darrelle to Pittsburgh, for essentially his homecoming. You know, it's such a weapon to use against Roethlisberger and the gang. My suspicion is that he'll probably be able to go because all indications are that he was, himself, for the most part, after the game and the days after. His baseline scores were a little bit shaky, and obviously, I mean, that concerns you. Those are the kind of things that they're going to look at today, tomorrow, Friday, and see what happens. But my suspicion is he'll play, but you know what? I also do believe they'll be cautious. If there's any kind of question, I think it's one of those things where you kind of hope you can grind through it this week and just get him healthy. But obviously, he's such a big part of what they do. Not only because he's great, and you all know how great he is if you've watched him, and you guys have watched him even longer than we have in New York, but when you're talking about a game-turning play, I mean, Sanchez just had a terrible interception on his first series of the year on Sunday, and a lot of grumbling in the stands, and same old Sanchez and same old Jets, and you know what happens? Three plays later, here comes Darrelle, and he makes an interception off of Ryan Fitzpatrick, makes a great read in the ball, and that really turned things so completely around on Sunday, and that's the kind of thing that Revis gives the Jets. I mean, not just the he's obviously his talent of being probably certainly the best quarterback in the game today. He's not one of the best defensive players, but innate to the timing. I mean, last year, whenever he would make a play, it always seemed like a play was when they really needed it to happen. He's got that star sense for the dramatic, and I really think that that's such a big part of who the Jets are, both in terms of their schemes and their personality.
Mike, Ryan Fitzpatrick had several interceptions. I believe you even had an interception in that game. But one thing that stuck out to me, at least in the first quarter viewing of that game, is how it showed up on the stat sheet too, is that the Jets defense did not have a sack on the day. You know, they, and I didn't really see a lot of pressure too, but I like what Muhammad Wilkerson's doing over there, you know, on the end. Did you see anything specifically that wasn't allowing the Jets defense to get a lot of pressure?
You know what? It's interesting. They didn't record a sack, but I thought that their pass rush was as good as it's looked, you know, maybe in 2 years. I mean, they got a lot of pressures on them. And I think that's the thing. I mean, the Jets can get to the quarterback if they do these blitzing schemes, but certainly against a team like Pittsburgh, they would like to keep that to a minimum because Ben's the kind of quarterback who's going to burn them, you know, one after the other if they send too many guys. And I thought that was really the, you know, I thought Calvin Pace, you know, had a really good game the other day. The Jets are blessed with a pretty strong secondary, and so as long as you give the quarterback reason to feel uncomfortable back there, you know, that's almost as important for the way the Jets do things as actually putting him on his back. It's going to be interesting. I know the Steelers have their offensive line issues. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, which immovable object is able to make the most headway, the Jets defensive front or the Steelers offensive front, but I think that was the most encouraging thing that you saw of the Jets front, is that they were actually able to get some penetration, get through and hurry Fitzpatrick. Now, I think Fitzpatrick's the kind of guy who's going to be, you know, who's going to struggle more when he's got to, you know, move his feet and kind of improvise and Ben will. But certainly you're giving yourself a better option if you're making the quarterback less uncomfortable. And it seemed like all year last year, quarterbacks were able to stand there, you know, 3 Mississippi, 4 Mississippi, 5 Mississippi, and stand downfield. And that's when, you know, you kind of neutralize the Jets' advantages in the secondary.
Yeah, and I only saw the first quarter of action there. I do see that they had 6 hits, I believe, and 6 hurries on Fitzpatrick. So, you know, definitely the pressure was there and forced him into those errors. Bart Scott, how would you, you know, when you also look at the rushing statistics in that game, of course, we know Fred Jackson went down with the injury early. C.J. Spiller came in. He ended up running for 169 yards on the day. And when I look at the directional snaps in that game, they ran, I believe, 22 times to the right end for a 4.59 average yard per game. Was there anything to that? Was that anything to be alarmed about defensively for the Jets?
No, I think so. And I think that, look, I mean, you know, the bulk of those points they scored came after the game was decided. But I'll tell you what, you know, the first breakout run that Spiller had for the touchdown ran right over Bart Scott. You know, Scott was also responsible for Darrell Revis. He accidentally kicked him in the head. So it was kind of a tough day for Bart. And then afterward, he blew off the media because he's unhappy with the way that we portrayed him, even though we portrayed him, you know, partly because of how chatty Bart Scott was his first couple of years here. He's a very interesting guy. I mean, when he first arrived here, he was a very popular Jet. That popularity has waned because his performance hasn't really equaled, you know, the hype that was laid for him and that he laid for himself when he came here. I do think it's a concern. He showed some signs last year that he was having a bounce back here, but he was very inconsistent. He's a guy I think that a lot of people believe is given the status he has on that unit because of reputation more than performance. Obviously, he's been a terrific player in this league in the past, and I think that's kind of what Rex Ryan is hoping for. Look, I mean, the Jets are a lot better if he plays better. I mean, they're not necessarily better if you remove him with somebody else. They just have to hope that he plays the way he played his first year with the Jets and for most of his time in Baltimore. And so far, you really never know over the last couple of years what Bart Scott you're going to get when he shows up on Sunday.
When you look at also this game with the, you know, start getting into previewing this game against the Steelers, if you're the Steelers, do you try to establish the run? I mean, the Steelers try to do that against the Broncos to keep Peyton Manning for the sole purpose to keep Peyton Manning off the field. They were able to do that. It's just when Peyton Manning was back on the field, he was able to run the no-hurry offense and kind of gas the defense and take what was given him underneath. How would you attack, if you're the Steelers, how would you attack the Jets' defense?
Well, I think that you have to try and establish the run, especially if you look at what Buffalo was able to do. I mean, look, I mean, you can say why they gained all those yards and why they scored those second half points and why Spiller looked like Jim Brown, but the fact is he did. And I think that, I mean, if you're the Steelers, you have to think to yourself, well, we're probably better at that than Buffalo is, so, you know, why can't we do that as well? And obviously, if you're able to do that, then all of a sudden everything the Jets do in the passing game, which I think is their strength, you know, is minimized, if not neutralized. And I think that that certainly that's something that, that the Steelers have to, if I were the Steelers, that's what I would do, because I think that's where, you know, at least off of week one, that's where you would think that the defense is a soft underbelly is right now.
And do you think the Jets will attack the Steelers by, you know, pretty much the same way? You know, are they going to the biggest thing I saw with Peyton Manning is they didn't keep him behind the chains. And Peyton, if you let a Peyton Manning stay on schedule and ahead of a chains, he's going to kill you because he gets into second and unpredictable and his whole playbook opens up to him. You know, I see the Jets only ran for 118 yards on the game, 3.3 average, but they're going to try to establish that running game early on, correct?
I mean, that's who they are. I mean, you know, you can look at Sanchez's statistics; they look terrific. But you know, he's not going to be Drew Brees all of a sudden. I mean, you know, a lot of his success is contingent upon having a balanced attack. That's part of the reason why they went through this massive offensive overhaul this year, because I think Rex was very uncomfortable with how, you know, last year's offense, you know, became a little bit too pass happy. That's great to say. I think it's still yet to be determined whether Sean Green is the kind of guy who can be a, you know, consistent 20-25 carry a game guy who's going to give you a lot of production out of that slot, and that's still to be determined.
And I'm wrapping up with Mike Vaccaro. I'm afraid David Todd, I think he dropped off there. So, Mike, I'm going to be wrapping you up here. How about a prediction? You care to throw out a prediction for us for this game?
I think it'd be a really good game. I think the Jets are kind of walking into a buzzsaw. They might have been able to catch a little bit napping, I think, if the Steelers are able to finish out the Broncos in week one. I'm going to go around 2017 Steelers. I think it's probably going to be a late field goal, and I think it's probably going to take a final late stand from the Steelers to keep the Jets out. But I do think the Steelers are probably going to be a little bit too much for the Jets. Jets are, I think the Jets are going to be better than people think. I just don't think they're ready to win a game like that in Pittsburgh just yet.
And you can read Mike's work on the New York Post website, one of the most popular papers in New York. Of course, he does great work there. Well, we're happy to have him on again. You can go to nypost.com. You can follow Mike on Twitter, and I highly suggest you do. Mike Vacc. And, Mike, I want to thank you again for taking time out for being on the Terrible Podcast. I speak for David as well, who dropped off the line there, and we're glad to have you on, and we hope to talk to you again sometime.
Maybe sometime in January for another AFC Championship game. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Mike, we appreciate your time as always.
All right. Take care.
So thanks to Mike Vaccaro for being with us here on the Terrible Podcast, and my apologies for getting knocked out technically there for the last 5 minutes or so, but – as always, Dave carried the mail. That's going to wrap things up for this week, Dave. We'll be back Friday with our analysis of the Jets-Steeler game with our picks for the week. I haven't actually graded our picks. I think you probably got me because I know I was wrong in the Steelers-Broncos, and I know I was wrong on the Pats-Tennessee game. So I think we had most of the others the same.
I haven't totaled.
I got Falcons Chiefs wrong too.
I will have to total those up.
I think you smoked me. Yeah, we did.
At least I got, you know, the couple that I had with the man this week helped come back from my brutal Saturday that I had. So the man still got me. I could care less about you right now.
There are more important things.
Sure, I'm after the man, David. I'm not after you right now. But
all right. So who knows when this is actually going to get up? But Dave's going to be a guest on my show today at around 3:20, 3:25. So be sure to tune into that. And, Dave, you know, that's going to wrap things up.
We've got real quick my adjusted net yards per passing attempt differential stats up this morning. I'll have content all day on Steelers Depot. Follow me at Steelers Depot. Follow David at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Appreciate our guest Mike Vaccaro coming on today. And listen to Dave and support his show on ESPN 970 and Steelers Nation Radio, please, as well, too. He needs your support there.
And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.